Hi, everybody. It's Joe Lample, and welcome to Growing a Greener World. This is a show for people who love to garden and spend time outdoors and who really care about environmental stewardship. This week, it's an interview with Paul Tukey. His crusade for environmental stewardship within the lawn and garden industry stems from an interesting personal experience. He's the American Horticulture Society's 2006 Communicator of the Year, founder of SafeLawns.org, author of the Organic Lawn Care Manual, and host of HGTV's People, Places, and Plants. He put an organic lawn on the Great Mall in Washington, D.C., and he's wrapping up completion of a major film about one town in Canada's crusade to ban lawn and garden chemicals that is now sweeping the country. We'll also announce last week's book winners. There are four, and give away more books this week. If you have a question or comment, contact us anytime. Our phone line is always open. The number is 206-202-2303, or email us at heyjoe@joegardner.com. If you're a regular to the show, you know that each week we give away great books. Congratulations to all four winners from last week. Cheryl Biden in the UK, Stephanie Lamphere from Birmingham, Alabama, Lynn McDonald of Fairfield, California, and Catherine Dante of Colts Neck, New Jersey. They each get a copy of the recently released book by Tracy DiSabato-Ost, 50 High Impact, Low Care Plants. And all they did to win was join our email list and mention that they heard about it from the podcast. And that's all you have to do to be eligible to win too. Just go to joegardner.com and you'll see the sign up on the homepage of our website. I always appreciate having the chance to catch up and converse with the horticultural heroes that are doing so much on behalf of gardening and environmental stewardship. And I don't know anyone working harder at that right now than Paul Tukey. He's founder of SafeLawns.org and author of the Organic Lawn Care Manual. His efforts there and elsewhere earned him the honor of being named the American Horticulture Society's 2006 Communicator of the Year. He's the HGTV host of People, Places, and Plants, and that only scratches the surface. He's taken his on-camera skills behind the camera as he wraps up completion of a major film about one town in Canada's crusade to ban lawn and garden chemicals. And if that's not enough, he put an organic lawn on the Great Mall in Washington, D.C. I caught up with Paul between meetings to talk about a few of these things and more. One of the things that I was first impressed with you about was your founding of SafeLawns.org. Tell me a little bit about that. What inspired you to do that and what's behind that?
Well, really, when I was asked to write a book, it was funny, you know, and you've got some experience with this, Joe. I mean, I've been the same guy my whole life, and all of a sudden, at one point, I'm on Home and Garden television with a television show, and I become a big hairy deal to certain people in the world, and I start getting book offers. And, you know, initially, I said, the world doesn't need another gardening book. You know, there's a lot of them that come across my desk as a magazine editor every day. But I decided that maybe it did need another book. It needs a couple more by Joe Lample and, you know, at least one by Paul Tukey. And so I wrote the Organic Lawn Care Manual. Uh-huh. And that I really started researching it. And throughout 2005, I was putting that book together. And then when I turned in the manuscript, the publisher said, what are we going to do about publicity? And says, you know, we want to send you on a 20-city book tour. We want to have to go to bookstores and all over the place. And woo-hoo. I thought to myself, and my reaction to him at that time, it sounds a bit egotistical, but I said, you know, going to Topeka and selling 6 books or 12 books doesn't seem like a very good measure of success. I have bigger goals than that. I really want to change the way Americans care for their lawns and landscapes, because I fundamentally see it. I saw it then. I see it now as a sort of a cultural malaise. People are putting down products that they have no idea how those products really work, what's really inside those products, what's an inert ingredient, and nobody asks those kinds of questions. And I knew that there was just a big underlying problem there. So in response to my publisher saying, what are we going to do about publicity, I started thinking about it. I said, you know, I want to create a foundation that's bigger than Paul Tukey selling books, that really can become a clearinghouse of information, of video, of how-to, of links to other providers. And so in February of 2006, we went live with the safelawns.org website. And it was really just one of those, I'm a great 3 o'clock in the morning inspiration guy, as I suspect you are. Like, I'll sit up and I drive my wife crazy sometimes with my next idea. And so 3 o'clock in the morning, I sat up and said, Safe Lawns. And actually was on the road, and my called my wife about 8 o'clock in the morning. I let her sleep in and I said, register this domain name. And I said, safelawns.org. And so she did. And that's a kind of a long-winded answer to your story, but Safe Lawns is really, in the last 3 years, it's been almost 3 years now since we went live. You know, we've had millions of visits to the website from around the country and, in fact, around the world. And it's very gratifying. I was just in Seattle, I think, where you were. We didn't actually see each other. But to be a guy from Maine and go out to Seattle and have people show up at your lecture and say, geez, thank you for doing the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
It is gratifying, and it is bigger than me. There's lots of people involved, and that's really how it got started. And it's not anywhere near as well-funded as it ought to be. And every day is still a struggle, and nonprofits in general are struggling right now in this economy. But we're proud of the work that we've done.
Paul, you've also come from a background where this was really meaningful to you. I guess you would have liked to have a safelawns.org when you were in the business yourself. Talk about that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, my story is that I became a quote-unquote professional landscaper, which meant that I had a pickup truck and a lawnmower, and I could walk in a pretty good straight line behind that lawnmower. That's about all I knew when I got into this industry. I grew up on a dairy farm, so I have a innate knowledge and ability to grow a tomato because my grandmother taught me when I was a little boy, and I know the difference between a branch and a sucker, and I can do that. But I really, when I got into the lawn care business back in the late 80s, I had no idea what I was doing. And the cooperative extension services of the day taught you the four-step plan, you know, pre-emergent crabgrass control and post-emergent weed control and post-emergent insect control and those kinds of things. And I bought that hook, line, and sinker and built up a company with, well, I think in my best year, 92, 93, we probably grossed $1.3, $1.4 million. And folks, that doesn't mean that much went into my pocket, but that's, you know, we were doing 800 customers and we had 27 employees and 11 trucks. And,
wow.
And there would be months of the year, April and May into June, where I'd literally be wading through the weed and feed all day long. And I wound up in the hospital with something called acute chemical sensitivity. Basically, I had overwhelmed my own body with exposures to chemicals that I was working with. And I tried to go what I call cold turkey organic with all of my customers in 1994. And they all said, fine, you can go organic on our lawns. They didn't know what it was. And they said, as long as it looks just as good, as long as it doesn't cost anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Oh.
And so I just, you know, blindly go into organics and lost my proverbial shirt because organic products in 1994 were few and far between, and they were way more expensive. And sometimes organics would work on certain yards, and other yards it didn't seem to work well at all. And so, yes, I would love to have had a Safe Lawns organization around back in 1994. That would have been great. It would have saved me a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of struggles. And that's why we exist. We exist to share information to homeowners, to professionals, to help people with that transition and help them understand that going organic now doesn't have to mean going ugly. You can have a beautiful landscape without the chemicals.
And for example, you had a huge project on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Talk about that. How did that come about and what was the result of that?
Well, again, it comes from my own boldness and brashness that I've developed. People are surprised to hear that I was once voted the shyest kid in the Falmouth High School class of 1979. But you learn when you're self-employed, you learn that no one's going to speak up for yourself but you. So in April of 2007, we were in front of the Capitol, right where Barack Obama was inaugurated about a month ago. And we were kicking off the Safe Lawns project, and we had water quality scientists and soil scientists and veterinarians and pediatricians. We had an audience of a couple hundred people, not a couple million people. But we were proud of our little event that day. And I was looking out at the mall and the grass down there, and it's really, what I say, god-awful. It's probably the ugliest lawn in all of North America, which is America's front lawn. And it's because 30 million people a year visit the mall. There's no fence there, and it just gets trampled to death, constantly trampled. And but I'm being bold. I said, just loud enough so a few people could hear, you know, they ought to let us go organic on the National Mall. We'd make it a whole lot better and a whole lot healthier.
Yeah.
And as I joke in my public talks, you know, I had absolutely no idea how we were really going to pull that off. But one of the lobbyists for our side said, "Paul, do you think you could do that?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, we could do that." Figured out later how to do it. And we met with the EPA and the National Park Service over 6 months of negotiation going back and forth. And I'll tell you a funny story without naming names, but among the many challenges was convincing the folks at the EPA. Now, the EPA has about 40 scientists that work for it down in Washington. And all of those positions are funded by fees from pesticide companies, from the chemical companies. So here I am in this office, and the guys, you can tell that half of them think I'm the Antichrist.
The den of wolves.
And, yeah, and so the guy, the head scientist, sitting in the back of the room in this little tiny room with 16 people, and there wasn't no air in that room at all. The guy says, "Okay, Mr. Tukey, you've got our attention here. We're busy people. Tell us how you're going to do this organic renovation." And I said, "Well, we're going to have to plow it up and turn over the soil, get some air in there." And okay, he thought that was okay. And I said, "Then we're going to have to add compost and probably drench it with some compost tea to get some life back in that soil." And he raises his hands. He said, "Stop right there." And I said, "Is there a problem?" He said, "You can't put compost and compost tea on the National Mall. You'll kill all the old ladies and children." So I tried not to blush. I'm sure I did. And I proceeded to tell him that, you know, we weren't going to kill any old ladies and children, that, you know, there was no E. coli in what we were going to put down. And if he wanted the proof, then we would have it tested for him. But this is his initial reaction, that organics was somehow dangerous, that compost was riddled with human pathogens. And this is the kind of message that the chemical companies would really like to see out there. They'd like to have that be the predominant feeling. And when I speak in public and I talk about Dr. Ingham and the soil food, and if you don't know who she is, I'm sure you do, but she's from Oregon State, and she founded the Soil Food Web Laboratories, and she's really one of the matriarchs of the organic soil science movement in this country, and really helps further the understanding that not all bacteria are bad, not all nematodes and protozoa and all of these things that you haven't even thought about since a high school biology test that you didn't want to take. There are good bacteria and bad bacteria, and by going organic, you need to embrace all the organisms in the soil, the earthworms that we can see and all of the microorganisms that we can't see. Mm. And like what I like to tell people is that to be successful in organics, and it could be lawn care on the mall, it could be lawn care in your backyard, it can be your vegetable garden, your trees and shrubs, you need to embrace the idea that your soil needs to be every bit as alive as you and I are. Mm. And those organisms in the soil have the same needs that we do to eat and drink and breathe, and they digest their food and excrete their food. And only when the organisms excrete their food does natural fertilization happen. Mm-hmm. It's called mineralization. But that happens billions of times a nanosecond in nature. The reason that forests grow really tall is because Mother Nature is constantly biodegrading the pine needles and the leaves and the bark, and mm-hmm. all of those, that biodegrading process, that eating and digesting and excretion process.
You mean there's no guys coming out through there with big spreaders throwing
out
the...
No, there's nobody. You know, funny thing, is, you know, I was out in the Pacific Northwest where you were and made that joke. I said, you know, the redwood forest. I said, funny thing, that grew without Miracle-Gro. Can you believe it? And they kind of get the idea.
Okay, so they went forward with it, apparently.
We did go forward with the mall project, and they gave us 6 months to do it, 6 months of winter, mind you. We broke ground on September the 27th.
Nice,
and
guys.
The fence came down on March the 27th, and we were there with photographs the whole way, April the 4th, May the 4th. I mean, the mall looked absolutely drop-dead gorgeous, and then they had a graduation ceremony in late May, George Washington University, and somebody put black plastic down on part of it for 9 days. I don't care if you grow your lawn chemically, organically, how you grow it, plastic on it for 9 days isn't going to do it any good.
No.
And
cooked it.
So that happened, and then the year went through, and certain sections of it continued to look good. Certain sections where they put the plastic didn't look good, and then we had this little inauguration deal about a month ago, with you know, a couple million people trampling it, and there was money in the budget to redo it, our section. But then the Republicans, not to pick on Republicans in general, but the Republicans decided that spending money on lawn makeovers wasn't a good idea in this climate. So I'm not sure what we're going to be doing on the mall going further if we're not going to get a cooperation. But I've got the proof is in the undoctored photos that the renovation looked fantastic. The soil was alive. It was healthy. And we've not just on the National Mall project, but we do these kinds of projects all over. We're doing one in Boston. We've got one going in New Jersey. We're talking about doing one down in St. Louis. And part of what the foundation does is what we call marquee sites, where we pick sites around the country that are strategically located, high visibility sites, and we do an organic lawn makeover. And it's really just to make the point to people that you can have a gorgeous landscape without the chemicals.
Absolutely. Now, on top of that, you've gotten yourself involved in another little tiny project, a film documentary, correct?
Yes, we're very excited about this. Our goal at this hour is to enter this film into the Toronto International Film Festival, which is one of the five most prestigious film festivals in the world. Mm. And the festival is in September. So when after we do that, then this fall in the spring of 2010, we will take it around to the flower shows and screen it around the country and have it available for DVD sales. It's the story of the first town in North America that ever banned lawn chemicals.
Mm.
And the story really focuses on this one woman. She was a dermatologist, and in 1984, she had a patient come to her who had rashes all over her legs. And she said, despite the usual treatments of 30 years of being a dermatologist at that point, because this is a very elderly woman at this point, but at that point, she couldn't figure out why this woman had this rash, and despite the usual treatments, the rash kept getting worse and worse, and the woman was hospitalized. And when she did the blood work and sent the blood work out, couldn't figure it out, and then sent it to a specialist and found out that the acute toxicity in her blood was caused by the 2,4-D, the Kilex. Mm-hmm. That's what they call, you know, the 2,4-D products in mm-hmm. Canada. That used to be Kilex in the United States, and then that became a politically incorrect name here in the United States, so they changed it. They call it Weed Be Gone now. But up in Canada, they still call Weed Be Gone Kilex. And anyway, so this woman was made very ill by her husband's use of the 2,4-D weed killer. And then this woman, the dermatologist, found out that this particular patient wasn't the only person having adverse reactions. She found out that she started gathering blood from all kinds of patients and finding out that they had unsafe levels of 2,4-D and then other kinds of pesticides in their blood, and that the symptoms were showing up in myriad ways, anything from blurred vision and nosebleeds and nausea to rashes and other kinds of irritations. So she wrote to the Canadian government, didn't get any satisfaction, started writing to the medical review boards and didn't get any satisfaction. So she ended up going to her own town. And there's a message in this for everyone who's listening, because she ended up going to her own town where there are six counselors and a few people that show up at town meeting. And for 6 years, this woman was relentless, going to town meetings and reading findings that she had researched or describing her own findings in her office. And in 1991, the new mayor of the day took a vote, and three of the counselors said, "I think June's wacky." This is the doctor, June Irwin. Three counselors didn't agree with her. Three of the counselors did agree with her, and the mayor himself agreed with her. So the town of Hudson, Quebec, banned ChemLawn and Lawn Doctor and all of the chemical lawn care companies from doing business in their town.
Wow.
This case went to local court, to Superior Court, to the Canadian Court of Appeals, and then ultimately to the Canadian Supreme Court.
Mm.
And the little town that could won all the way through.
Wow.
Now, 55% of Canada is living under the lawn chemical bans.
Wow.
ChemLawn's basically out of business in Canada as we know it.
Oh.
The city of Toronto, the city of Montreal, Halifax, Vancouver, all of these cities have banned lawn chemicals. Home Depot, last year, April the 22nd, voluntarily banned all lawn chemicals in all of its stores in Canada, even though it wasn't banned in 100% of Canada yet. They could see the writing on the wall. So they came out and said, "We want to be friends of the environment. we want to be friends to human and pet health, so we're not going to sell lawn chemicals anymore.
Wow.
And what I say in the movie, because I have a role in this movie kind of as the narrator, storyteller, you know, I say, okay, Home Depot wants to be friends of the environment in Canada, but in 2,700 stores here in the United States, they still sell these things. And to me, it's a fairly obvious question. You know, what the hell? If it's bad in Canada, it's the same exact products. Why is it not bad here in the United States? And, you know, a lot of people feel like, well, that's the flaming liberal Canadian government allowing that to happen. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of this stuff. And we've been selling it for years. And the movie talks about the fact that that's a predominant opinion here in the United States, is that this stuff has been sold for years, it's been used for years, and it's fundamentally fine. But meanwhile, Canada and Europe and lots of the rest of the world have banned these things. And we need to wake up here in the United States. We need to wake up and take a look at what they're doing in Canada. So that's what the movie's called A Chemical Reaction. And it's really, the phrase a chemical reaction can be read a number of different ways, and that's why we picked that title. It's really sort of about the domino effect that happened in Canada, where town by town, province by province, they began to ban these things. It's also the reaction that people can have when they're exposed to chemicals, and it's the reaction that people in the United States either have or don't have. And you know, people are sort of blissfully unaware in the United States, I suppose, that we're fertilizing and fumigating our lawns with these products that are known toxins, and they're raising hell with our environment and with our health. People can go to a website,
okay.
PFZ, Z as in zebra, P as in Paul, F as in Frank, Z as in zebra, PFZmedia.com, and you can watch, you can download the trailer,
And
you can read a 4 or 5 paragraph description. So there's a 3 or 4 minute trailer on there. It'll give you an idea of what the movie's about.
Oh, cool.
And it's exciting. It's definitely, I've done a national television show, and I've done radio and other forms of news media, and we've never made a movie before. This movie's going to be about 75 minutes long.
Wow. And then, you know, and from all of that, you know, the movie then springboards you onto the podcast for Growing a Greener World. So, I mean, how high can you go? Come on.
Absolutely. this is the pinnacle right here.
I'm telling you. It's all of that. You know, I mean, I wouldn't even be interested in talking to you had you not done all those other things first. So you arrive here. You're there, buddy. Hey, Paul, real quick, I'm going to let you go, but I want to ask you to pull your crystal ball out. What's going to happen with Canada? Are we going to go 100% organic there? And is it going to trickle down south?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's why we're making this movie. Is now, it's a funny thing. Somebody up there pointed this out to me. In the United States, in much of, you know, certainly affluent neighborhoods of the United States, if you have a lawn that's riddled with dandelions and clover and plantain and chickweed and crabgrass, your neighbors look down upon you like you're the black sheep of the neighborhood. They think you're ruining their property values, and you've got bad politics in the home, and you're just a bad person in general.
So that's why they're not speaking to me. Okay. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
And in Canada, if you don't have a few dandelions and some clover and some chickweed, there's been a whole cultural shift there. Huh. People up there think that you're cheating. They think you must be running to the United States, buying your chemicals, and smuggling them back across the border. And really, that's happened in less than 10 years, in less than one generation. There's been a whole shift up there, and it gives me great hope in this movement that you and I are both on here to say that you can do this. And guess what? Property values haven't dropped in Canada, in the town of Hudson, a bit. In fact, a lot of people, because Hudson has had such notoriety on this, a lot of young families are moving to Hudson now because they don't want their children to grow up in the midst of this chemical soup. And the Quebec government has done blood tests on kids ages 3 to 7, and stunning results, but common sense results. In communities where the pesticides are not banned, kids ages 3 to 7 have these chemicals in their body. And in the communities, if you live in a community where these products are banned, the chemicals aren't there. Huh. And they're not getting the behavioral problems in those communities. I mean, there's a direct link between ADHD, there's a direct link to all kinds of childhood maladies in these lawn chemicals. And the Canadian government has the data to prove it. But as long as we have strong chemical lobbyists in the United States, that kind of data is not going to be allowed. And they'll poo-poo it. They'll say, well, that's just Canada, as if Canada somehow doesn't mean anything. And same thing in Europe, where they just passed a law, the European Union, where if you want to introduce a chemical into the marketplace, you actually have to prove that it's safe first.
Wow.
In the United States, they put chemicals out there, and if they later prove to be dangerous, then they take them off the market later. But, you know, chemicals are innocent until proven guilty in the United States, just like criminals. But in Europe, in Canada now, is something called the precautionary principle, a better safe than sorry approach to this kind of thing. And you have to absolutely, the burden of proof is on the manufacturer to prove that this stuff is safe beyond a shadow of a doubt. Mm. And that's an enormously difficult thing to prove. And the chemical companies here in the United States say, well, that would be so expensive for us, you know, you'd never get a new chemical released. Well, would that be such a bad thing? Mm. And I'm talking about cosmetic, you know, backyard chemicals.
Yeah.
I understand that chemicals in certain industries and certain times and places have a place. I don't want to come across as a complete fanatic.
Well, Paul, this has really been interesting. You know, you're fighting a good fight, and I just really wish you the best of luck. I hope you can maintain the energy, and it looks like you're building momentum every day. And I know you're incredibly busy, and that can't be a bad thing. So I just want to thank
you. I'm not unlike you, and it's wonderful to see people like you that are out there that are with high visibility, and I know that you've had your own transformation, which is not dissimilar to my own.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, if I were out there completely on my own, it would be a pretty lonely place. But I'm not alone. And the work that you do and the message that you get across is wonderful. And there are a bunch of us out there now.
Yeah.
I do a whole hour-long talk now about the language of organics and really what makes organics work. And if you see phrases as a consumer like organic-based on the bag or the bottle, it's not organic.
Mm.
It's, you know, if it's really truly organic, it's going to have ingredients on the back that you readily can understand what they are.
Yeah.
And if the ingredients on the back of the bag are ammoniacal nitrogen or some compound that you can't even pronounce, it's not organic. So
yeah.
My opinion is that it's a good sign that a lot of the chemical industry is moving toward organic, but in the meantime, there's a lot of consumers out there being duped by what looks like something that's organic and it really isn't.
Well, and it creates a lot of confusion too. You know, there's still
tremendous confusion, and that again, that's why I started giving that version of my talk. And the talk starts out with a big picture of George Bush scratching his head, saying what's organic based and what isn't. And you know, the quick definition of organic is that the product in the bag or bottle should either come from a plant, animal, or mineral. It doesn't fundamentally originate in a laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a really quick sort of one-sentence definition of organic. But there are other deeper definitions, and people just need to understand it is really a completely different approach to gardening.
Paul Tukey is founder and national spokesperson for SafeLawns.org and a crusader for environmental stewardship. If you have a question about today's interview, or anything at all for that matter, you can call us at 206-202-2303 or send us an email to heyjoe@joegardner.com. If you enjoyed today's show, you'll want to be sure to register for the e-newsletter, because this week we're giving away two copies of Paul's book, The Organic Lawn Care Manual, thanks to Story Publishing. All you have to do for a chance to win is sign up for the newsletter, and that's easy to do. Just go to joegardner.com and you'll see the sign up on the homepage. Just be sure when you register, you say that you heard about us on the podcast. You can write that in the comment field. And while you're on the website, check out all the great content in the articles section and be sure to visit my blog, Compost Confidential. That's where I share my insider's view on the lessons and news of gardening and living green. Well, that's it for today. This show is produced by the Joe Gardner Media Network. You can access the show notes for this episode as well as any previous shows on our website at joegardner.com/podcast. You can also order a signed copy of my latest book, The Green Gardener's Guide. And don't forget to check out the blog, Compost Confidential. If you have a question or comment, call us anytime. The number is 206-202-2303 or send us an email to heyjoe@joegardner.com.
And until next time, consider this from me. If you work hard at creating healthy, organically enriched soil and put the right plant in the right place, you'll eliminate 95% of your garden and landscape maintenance problems. Think about it. And thanks for listening. This is Joe Lample, and I'll see you back here next week for more Growing a Greener World.